Ching, ching, bling, bling. Let's cut the chatter. In this episode, we talk about overcoming adversity, the Anfernee McLemore way. Welcome to the Tucci Talks Wealth, Health, and Everything Else podcast. I'm your host, David Tucci, an educator, a father of three. Join me as I take you on a funky journey through life from a reckless young man to a humbled older man. Each week, I will offer different insights on my life experiences and the experiences of others and how that has shaped our present day realities. So let's begin our funky journey into improving our health, wealth, and you guessed it, everything else. I just can't get enough of that intro music. At the very least, it has to get you moving, even just a little. And given that it's Monday, we need to be moving. Welcome again to another episode of Tucci Talks, Wealth, Health, and Everything Else. I'm your host, David Tucci. I'm excited for today's episode because we are going outside the GTA and welcoming our first American guest to the podcast. But before we dive in, let's get to our recap segment. As always, the recap is brought to you by Anchor. What did I learn from last week's episode listening to Leanda's story? That we collectively have to recognize that change on a massive scale needs to happen. But my opinion, I don't think it will, because the human mind is not equipped to handle drastic change. There's way too much cognitive dissonance taking place. However, if we are to disrupt the status quo, I have at least an attempt to fix a broken system. I may sound like I'm simplifying it greatly, and I realize that the matter is very nuanced and complex, but for the sake of simplicity, check this out. If you have something in your home that is broken, and you try to fix it, you realize it's not fixable. What do? You throw it away and you start fresh. You buy something new. Again, I know it's not this simple, and many people are just too oblivious. Yes, I said it. Oblivious is a new word. It means beyond oblivious. People are oblivious to an alternative because society is way too distracted, either with sports, entertainment, TikTok. It is because of these distractions that we are easily manipulated. I talked about it in episode 4 in my Bitcoin episode. We can no longer trust our financial institutions. How does that help race issues? Well, Bitcoin is a revolution. There's a reason why you see black people holding up Bitcoin signs at various Black Lives Matter rallies across the US. If you educate yourself, you're going to discover an ugly truth, that the current monetary and financial system is flawed and not fixable. An alternative to this system can only emerge from us, the people. And this, my friends, is where Bitcoin comes in. Bitcoin is a credible alternative to the current system supported by us, the people. Bitcoin is truly the money of the people. And what better way to start a revolution than to be on the same footing? However, for right now, what we do have is conversation. And I've received emails and texts about Leanda's story. And some agree, some don't agree. But that's not the point. The point is that we are talking. And I'm going to quickly share an excerpt that was eloquently written from a listener. He writes, "I hope with this episode, people will have the opportunity to listen, read, ask questions. This is the only way, because if the response is silence, continued microaggressions, white privilege, police brutality, it will be 2013, 2014, 2015, and many other years all over again. Those years represent protests demanding justice for Trayvon Martin, Mike Brown, and Freddie Gray. The questions will be asked again. Why Black Lives Matter? Don't all lives matter? Why can't we move forward and forget about the past? To those people who ask such questions, You are afraid to grow, and only God cares about all lives matter. Whew, that is some powerful stuff, and I really do appreciate the email. You can always leave your thoughts. You can email me at david@TucciTalk75.com, Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter at TucciTalk75. Please subscribe. Give a 5-star review if you like the content. It helps with the algorithm, so I'm told. On to today's episode. My next guest grew up in a small town in South Georgia. He started playing basketball in the 7th grade and realized quickly that he can turn his basketball skills into opportunity. His opportunity came knocking, and he was off to Auburn University, where he was fortunate enough to play in the 2019 Men's Basketball Final Four. He is here to share his story, so it is my pleasure to welcome Mr. Anfernee McLemore. Welcome to Tucci Talks. Thanks for taking the time. I know you have a hectic schedule. When I knew you were coming on, I was doing some research, and one of the articles I read, your fiance, you're not married yet, right, fiance?
Yeah.
Said that you would wake up in the night, and you'd be, you didn't have to be coerced. You just get up, say, yeah, I got this. How was that for you? Like, what kind of transition is that? You're 22 years old. You're a young guy. Guys your age are partying, and you're getting up in the middle of the night and changing diapers and feeding your child.
And I just think it was the way I was mentally established already. Even before my son got here, I wasn't a big guy to go out to the bars anyway. I was one to just like the home environment, just like to stay home. So it wasn't a huge adjustment, but it was just I had this new responsibility that I had to take care of this little guy, and I just wanted to make the most of it.
So let's jump right in. The title of this episode is Overcoming Adversity, the Anfernee McLemore Way. And the main discussion is going to be revolving around that horrifying injury you suffered in February of 2018. But you went through a different kind of adversity. And I rewatched the last 30 seconds of the Final Four in 2019, the last one that was played. And I can't help but think that if you play that game 100 times, that Auburn would win 99 times. Okay. Because there were a lot of questionable calls, questionable officiating down the stretch. Did your team feel like you were robbed of playing in a national championship?
Yeah, I definitely think that we don't feel like we were robbed, because there are just so many plays that lead up to that last instance, that last play. There's so many things that we could have done better. We could have played better. But at the same time, you know, you're just so grateful to have the opportunity to play on such a big stage that, you know, in the moment, when you have a guy like Bruce Pearl coach you up in that moment, you don't really look at the negative part of it. You look at the positive of the blessing of being able to be on the stage in the first place, rather than the negative connotation of having something taken away from you. Because in order to have something taken away from you, you have to have been blessed and been given something in the first place. And we were given the opportunity.
And that's a good point.
Yeah, that's pretty much all we could ask for, was just the opportunity to play for a national championship. And we weren't deserving of it. We weren't, you know, expected to win it. So the opportunity was just good enough for us in that moment.
Speaking of Coach Pearl, so what did he say to you after that game? Because you worked so hard to get to that moment. And what did he say to you guys in the locker room?
You know, one of the first things that he said was to not get on the social media and blame any officiating, which we weren't going to do in the first place. And then he really spoke to us about, just like I said, like how the opportunity to be there was just so impressive, of us being the first Auburn team, the first Alabama team in history to ever make it this far in the tournament. Like that means something. Like we etched our name in history, and that shouldn't be taken lightly just because we didn't make it as far as we wanted to.
Not even Barkley's team went that far.
Yeah, I think the furthest Barkley's team made it was a Sweet 16, and that was it. And then that was coming from a 16-year drought from 2003 to 2018 of not making the tournament in the first place.
Right.
And then a year after making it for the first time, then the second year, we make it all the way to the Final Four. This is something that wasn't expected of us. And he really preached that even though we didn't win the big dance, we didn't make it the whole way, we still sort of set the pavement for what's next to come, the future of Auburn basketball and the future of what's coming next.
So you were clutch. When I was watching, you were clutch in that game. So it was late in the game, and you got fouled, and you're up by two, and you can make it a two-possession game, and you're at the free throw line. And I see you looking at the bench, and you're saying something. What was going through your mind?
You know, when I was at the free throw line, I kept saying Fortuna. That's something that I kept rolling off my tongue, because two games before that, we were playing against North Carolina. Our starter forward, Chuma Okeke, got injured. He tore his ACL, done for the whole season. And this is a guy who is projected to be a lottery pick in NBA draft. He ended up getting drafted 14th by the Orlando Magic. And I just knew that we were up 3 points at a time, maybe two. But I knew that if I made those two free throws, all it took for me to make those two free throws, then we could metaphorically seal the game and make it to the next stage. So, you know, it was kind of nerve-wracking, because I'm on the biggest stage in college basketball. The game's on the line, basically, and I'm shooting two free throws. And, you know, as a kid, I guess you sort of grow up for that moment where all eyes on you. But when it's there, man, your hands are shaking. But that was just something I said for Chuma, which sort of made me more level-headed, made me more calm, and made me focus more on making those two free throws and knocking them down.
Speaking of the biggest stage, what's it like running? It was in Minneapolis, right? Did you have a tunnel that you ran out of?
Well, it was on the Minnesota Vikings football stadium field. So the court was elevated off the ground.
Right.
And it wasn't necessarily a tunnel, but it was more of a path you had to take in order to get to the court.
So what's it like running onto the floor in your warm-up gear, ready to play the biggest game of your career, and you see there was like 72,000 fans?
You know, it's really a surreal experience, because as a basketball player, you don't play on stages that big. You know, you're in the arena most of the time. And,
right.
And in that on that stage, if you looked around, you would feel like you're outdoors, because there is just so much space and so much activity going on outside of the court. And, you know, at times you could get overwhelmed and not focus on the basketball court, because the basketball court just seems so small with everything else that's going on around it. But, you know, after a while, you start to get tunnel vision on the goal and on the game itself. But just running out and just hearing that many, it's almost like being a football player, but, you know, without the helmet.
It's seriously
like a surreal experience to have your nerves, I mean, that much energy pumping through you, that much adrenaline pumping you all at once. It was crazy.
And that's a long way from where you grew up. You grew up in Warwick, Georgia. What was life like as a young kid for you?
Man, that's definitely like a night and day experience. As a kid, I grew up in Warwick, Georgia. Population 200 people, maybe 250. You know, we got maybe 50 people at the basketball games if we were lucky. So it's going from, you know, small town basketball to biggest stage in college basketball. It's like, you know, you just spend every day thinking, just being thankful for having the opportunity. And if I look back and, as you said, live that life over 100 times, I probably make it to Auburn maybe twice out of 100 times. It was just.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, just so many things lined up, and so many opportunities came my way to where I made it to Auburn and where I was able to be the player that I was able to be. It was just being in the right place at the right time.
So what did you do as a kid? Like, because I know when I was growing up, we were outside constantly, and we were reckless. We were getting into a lot of trouble. Parents were non-existent. So we played unsupervised. I know it's not like that today with technology. What was it like for you as a kid?
For me as a kid, just being in such a small town, it was pretty much the same as, you know, playing outside and really a lot more outdoor activities. And I really think that's what led me to being so competitive and what eventually led me to being a good basketball player, because as a kid, I played outside with my other friends and we always competed, whether it was basketball, racing, you know, racing bicycles, anything. That just sort of bred that competitive nature in me at a young age, and that's still what I draw from as an adult when I want to, you know, beat somebody in the video game. It's just, it goes back to those inner, you know, kid feelings of just wanting to be the best.
When did you know that you were good at basketball? Because I look at your senior year in high school, your stats are like 16 points, 13 rebounds, 6 blocks.
Yeah,
that's impressive.
I think as a sophomore in high school is when I really realized that I could be good. As a freshman in high school, I started playing varsity. But I was humbled very quickly because I didn't play a lot and I didn't play very well at all. But around the beginning of my sophomore season, I had one game where I had 35 points and 10 rebounds, and it wasn't that difficult to do that game. And I was like, man, like, you know, I thought players that do this are just like, you know, insane. You know, they just, you know, are shooting the ball all the time and just like are the guy on the team. I wasn't even number one option on the team at the time, and I was able to play like that. I was like, you know, if I can do this being the number two, number three option, imagine if I actually, you know, put some training, put some work in, be the number one guy and then play more efficiently, more efficient. I could take this basketball thing a long way. And that's the point when I realized that, you know, I can be a great basketball player if I stuck to it and I played very consistently.
Were you heavily recruited coming out of high school?
At the end of my high school, yeah, I was, but starting off, not at all, because I ended up playing for a very talented travel ball team, the Atlanta Celtics, and I played with the likes of Kobe Simmons, who played for the Charlotte Hornets, or Charlotte, yeah, Charlotte Hornets now, Bam Adebayo, who plays for Miami Heat now, and I just played around a whole bunch of talented guys. And I think half of the part of getting to a high-level basketball program is just getting that exposure, just getting your name out there, because if coaches don't know you, they can't recruit you. So just playing alongside those guys allowed me to show what I can do on the court, which helped me get to that better program like Auburn.
So Bruce Pearl came out to watch you, or they had some scouts?
I was watched by Bruce Pearl. He was actually one of the only coach from Auburn that liked me, which is, you know, crazy at that time, because when he first saw me, all the other coaches kind of wrote me off already, that I was too small, too skinny, too short to be a center. And you know, Coach Pearl, when he saw me, I was playing in New York City at a Adidas All-American camp, and he saw me. He was just like, "I like your motor. I like how you play. I like your grit, and I like your style." And then he told me this after I actually signed with Auburn that, you know, all the coaches didn't quote unquote believe in me, but yeah, he was persistent in that. You know, he wanted me to be a part of his program because he felt like he wanted those guys that were under-recruited and that had a chip on their shoulders, and that I kind of fit the player that he was looking for.
So you always had this kind of underdog, had to deal with adversity kind of all your life.
Just from where I grew up, a small town in Georgia, you know, nobody comes out of there playing basketball. South Georgia is football dominated part of the state. There's hardly any basketball talk at all. So that was already a huge disadvantage for me, just trying to be a basketball player. And then secondly, once I actually got to Auburn, when I first stepped foot on campus, I was already listed as the shortest center in SEC. And so they were thinking, you know, you got to switch positions. You got to be a power forward. You got to be a small forward. You know, there's no way you can play against 7-footers and be successful. You only weigh 205 pounds. How is that even possible?
Right.
And you know, I kind of, you know, I didn't let them get to me. I was like, you know, like everybody's gonna have their own opinion, but who says I can't be one of the first to do this and be successful at it? And my sophomore year, I ended up leading the SEC in block shots at 6'7" and playing center, which is, you know, just another testament of just not listening to the critics.
So then let's take you to that uneventful night on February 17th, 2018, late in the first half of a game at South Carolina. DeShaun Murray, your teammate, is attempting to take a charge, falls to the ground and right into your ankle. The result was a dislocated ankle, fractured tibia, torn ligaments. Were you aware of the surroundings at that point, the environment, the crowd noise? Like, what was going through your mind? Because I, if you look up, if people look up the injury, it's gruesome.
I think what was going through my mind at that point, I didn't hear any crowd noise, and to be honest, once I rewatched the video, I didn't hear any on the video as well. I just knew like immediately that my sort of basketball dreams were either over or on hold. And you know, in the moment, I thought that they were over. And I had never broken a bone before that day in my life, but it's like you know that feeling when something's not right. You know when something's bad. And I
So did
felt
you, at that moment, did you think you were never going to play basketball again?
it not in the moment, but when on the ambulance to the hospital in Columbia, South Carolina, I really thought that it was over. That, you know, I kind of went into a very, very quick depression on the ride, thinking that, you know, it was over. You know, 10 minutes before then, I was on the court playing basketball in a regular game that I played hundreds of times in my life. And then 10 minutes later, I'm on a stretcher with an air cast on my leg on the way to the hospital. It's so crazy how fast things can change.
At what point did you get to the mindset, this happened to me, so unfortunate, I had certain dreams? At what point do you stop feeling sorry and say, okay, it's time to get to work, it's time to get my training where it needs to be? How fast was that?
I went to surgery on the next day, and I think in the hospital or in the hotel, because I couldn't go to my dorm room because we had a whole bunch of flights, so I stayed in the hotel for next week. I think in the hotel the next week is when I sort of said to myself, like, this isn't it for me. You know, I'm not going to let this ruin my dreams to be a basketball player. And I didn't know how it was going to happen. I didn't know how fast it was going to happen, but I just knew from the day after surgery that I was going to take some path and make it back to being a basketball player, no matter what it took. I had a sort of epiphany that if I was going to work, I didn't know what I was going to work, but if I was going to work at something and do it consistently, that one day I was going to be back on the court again. And one day I was going to be, you know, just a great basketball player again.
So did you feel like you were on course to the NBA? And then after that, you felt like my chances have diminished now because of this particular injury?
I would say I felt like I was on course to be a professional basketball player and had opportunity at the NBA. I was obviously very undersized. I had a lot of things to develop, but I thought I had a chance, you know, a chance to get drafted, a chance to make a name for myself. But of course, to play overseas, a professional basketball player at some point. But once the injury happened, it sort of goes from having a chance at the NBA to just having a chance at being a professional basketball player, sort of drop down a level. And that's definitely a hit that I took very on the chin, very hard, and something I had to think about very hard.
But Europe has a lot of professional leagues. It's huge. There was no interest from Europe for your skill set?
Oh, yeah, there was definitely some interest from Europe. I actually, my entire senior year, I had to go through the decision of whether I was going to play in Europe or go into my career. And ultimately, I chose my career for a number of reasons. But, yeah, I had an agent, a very good agent, that was talking to some teams for me, and the opportunity was there, but I decided to go a different route.
So you chose to stay in the U.S. and be with your fiancé, in the future wife, and raise your family, essentially. That was the choice.
Yeah, because, you know, during my time at Auburn, I was able to graduate early and get started my master's degree in finance. And I felt like I had worked so hard for my education that it was something I was equally as happy about as I was basketball. So if I was to stay and start a job in wealth management as I'm doing now, you know, I wouldn't see myself as having failed in my ultimate goal to be successful.
Right. So how is that balance between a student athlete and like that? You're playing competitively high level, yet you need your academics in order. How is that balance?
It's different for many people, but for me, it was always being a student before an athlete. I always, you know, wanted to put my grades first. I'm from a military family, so that was, you know, discipline was very instilled into me. And I always knew that I had an opportunity to get a free education and that I was going to make the most of it. So if somebody wanted to give me a $250,000 scholarship, I was going to get, you know, every single drop of education I could out of it. And at the end of the day, it was thinking that I had worked so hard for 4 years to get 2 degrees. You know, why would it be a failure if I didn't use them? You know, why would people think I wasn't successful if I didn't use them?
So your assistant coach, I think it was your assistant coach, I read that he gave you a book called The Slight Edge. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, man. I keep that book with me everywhere I go. It's pretty much always in hand's reach. I got it right here. The Slight Edge.
And it's about incremental changes that lead to massive growth in an individual. And I think I want you to elaborate on that. Like, how important is that kind of concept?
Yeah, just having slight edge decisions. The basis of the book is you're making daily habits or you have daily disciplines that put you on the road to success. So the theory of the book is that any decision you make, whether positive or negative, are going to have a compounding effect on your life. So let's say I miss my rehab for one day. You know, that sort of builds a habit in my mind that, you know, missing rehab isn't all that bad, and that compounds into, instead of me coming back in 6 months, I come back in a year. But me having the slightest decision to get up out of bed and drag my butt to rehab has another compounding effect that, you know, I can do this. You know, even though I'm tired, I can still get up. And that leads to more positive slight decision that compounds in a positive snowball rather than a negative snowball. And I get back 3 months faster than expected. So it's all about snowballing your decisions. And even though something may seem so small and insignificant, if you choose the right way over the wrong way, you're compounding yourself in a positive manner.
I like that compound word, because we can even use that with a lot of people are saying, oh, this, the Black Lives Matter, it's not going to make a difference. But if we apply this concept, even the smallest change can start to compound, and maybe we can start to grow towards the future that we want.
Exactly. I think that you can't change something that you'd never start. So even though, you know, people, I hear it all the time, like my vote, you know, what's the matter of voting? You know, one vote may seem insignificant to you, but what if 40 million people said the same thing and that nobody voted? So you have that, you have one person, that one small change, and that, as you said, it compounds, and you get movements like Black Lives Matter that's spread all over the world at this point. And then you finally, you know, hopefully start to see some change in the police justice system and the way that minorities are treated in general, not even just Black people, but just, you know, Hispanics, Latinos, like anybody in general.
Right.
And you just start to see some change in the way of thought, saying, okay, maybe these people aren't what I thought they were before now.
So you're a high profile in the community, and you would go speak to elementary schools. How would kids relate to you, the little guys?
I think they relate to me because I was from a small town as well. Even though I was playing at Auburn, I was always an underdog. I was always, you know, expected to be an underachiever. And with those low expectations, I was always able to blast them out of the water and do way more than people ever expected of me. So going to elementary school, I see kids all the time who say, you know, they want to play with Auburn. And I can relate to them because, you know, even though, you know, the chances may be small for them, I can tell them, like, I had almost a less than 1% chance to get here and look where I'm at now. You know,
right.
I got a platform and just my success story from my upbringing of not even being where I'm supposed to be at right now relates well to so many kids who have that dream, that like that small dream that they want to be somewhere, and just letting them know that if you really want it, you want it bad enough, you can go and get it.
And you must, their faces must light up when they see a guy like you, because you know, you're kind, you're good hearted, good natured, and you probably interact well with them.
Yeah,
they must love that.
Yeah, I've always been one to always try to interact as much as I can to the kids, to anybody. So, you know, even after games, I go stay out way longer than everybody else and sign autographs if they want, or just, you know, just hang out with kids. That's why I do so much community service, because as a kid, that's what I would have wanted for me. If
right.
I would have wanted to be college basketball players come for me. So I really want to be the role model now that I needed when I was a kid for the kids that are kids now.
Your YouTube channel that you started, did you want to kind of leverage your Auburn basketball to highlight and show people what it was like to be a basketball player, overcome an injury?
My path for the YouTube channel was a little bit different because I am a man of many passions. I don't just see myself as a basketball player. So when I first started the YouTube channel, my passion is to teach people about financial freedom. I work as a wealth manager now for Regions Bank in the United States. And I wanted to show people, especially minorities who don't really get that formal financial education as a kid, the path, how easy it is if you do something consistently. We go back to this idea of doing something consistently over a long period of time. And whether that's we're working on your basketball game or investing money, it's all about doing something consistently over a long period of time. And if you start early and do it often, how fast you can reach financial freedom. And when I started working as a wealth manager, there were some conflict of interest between the content I was making and my actual job description. And so I had to pivot the channel. And I'm always live by the quote of, this is something I like to say, that a tree that is unbending is easily broken. So if I was to take that saying, the company that I work for is telling me that I can't make that content, oh, I guess I just won't do YouTube. You know, all right, I guess it's all over. Like, you know, what kind of way is that to live life? You have to navigate the obstacles and then find other ways to be successful.
That's amazing. You know, you're for you being so young, your vision and your mindset, it's incredible to me, because I'm actually talking to a 22. You're 22.
Yeah.
So who instilled this? Is it your parents? Like, where do you get this?
I think it just as a kid, I just I don't know. I just had a military family, a lot of discipline in my life, and a father who wasn't present. So it was always either learning from what was around me or what wasn't around me. So I think every person who was in my life at some point either taught me what to do or what not to do. And I always kind of took that mindset, whether I had people in my life who took the wrong path, that were older than me, and that I could learn from them. You know, okay, I don't want to do that because I see how they ended up. And it was always just having a forward thinking mindset to where I'm not where I want to be in life right now, and there are decisions that I can make today that can lead me to where I want to be.
Okay, so now I'm gonna move to a segment I have called Guess.
What?
What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna give you a quote from a basketball player. If you don't know who said it, you ask for a clue, and I'll give you one clue and see if you could get it, and then we'll just move to the next. Is that
All
cool?
right. Sounds cool.
Okay, so first quote: it's hard to play well, but it's easy to work hard. All you have to do is say clue, and I give you a clue.
Give me one clue.
His nickname rhymes with tarantula.
I thought it was Kevin Durant. Yeah.
All right, next. Okay, so success isn't owned, it's leased, and the rent is due every day.
Man, I heard this quote, but I feel like this player didn't come up with it. Is it give me a clue first.
Emperors lead empires. Kingdoms were led by these people. If emperors lead empires, kingdoms are led by who?
Kings. So
Who?
whose name is King?
King.
King. Whose name is King in the NBA?
It's only one.
Oh my goodness. King.
There's
I can't think
only one.
of only
There's only one king in the NBA.
I can't think of it. Oh
LeBron, King James.
I was thinking of the last name. Oh man.
Right, two more. You gotta get one of these at least. We gotta
Yeah,
end on a high
I was
note.
thinking too literally. Oh my goodness.
This is from an older player, not in the NBA.
Okay.
So he's obviously retired, long retired. You can win, sorry, you can't win unless you learn how to lose. I want to go to an OG player. These guys, we forget about these guys, but these guys are great.
What's the clue?
Hook shot master.
Kareem Abdul.
Way to go. Okay, last one. Last one.
All
Never say never, because limits, like fears, are
Oh,
often just an illusion.
that's my the GOAT, man. It's number
That's
23, Michael Jordan.
that was my clue. GOAT, GOAT. That's a good one. So
I know that one.
are you glad basketball's back?
Oh yeah, man. It's definitely something to take your mind off the current environment. So, you know, I love watching people compete, and I love basketball, so I'm glad.
So who do you have winning the NBA title this year?
Man, honestly, there's a lot of contenders, but you know, I want to see Giannis compete for his first NBA title. And I just want to see a Western Conference Finals between the Clippers and the Lakers.
Okay, that's going to happen. And I think Milwaukee's going to be going to the final. And I have Milwaukee versus the Lakers, and I have the Lakers winning it.
I definitely think well, with that matchup, I would say the Lakers win it too, but I don't think Giannis is gonna go down easy.
No way. He's the Greek freak.
Oh yeah. I love his game. He's probably one of my favorite players in the NBA.
So, you know what? I appreciate you coming on and taking the time. So, you're
All right,
awesome.
sounds good. This is a
All
lot of
right.
fun. I want to do it again in the future.
Perfect. Thanks. All right.
All right. Nice
Cheers.
talking to you.
What a pleasant young man. Very grounded, very down to earth. Such a precocious individual. I think at 22, I was in full tilt party mode. Having a family was the furthest from my mind, and I wonder what I would tell my 22-year-old self if I can go back. Nonetheless, a big thank you goes out to Anthony for sharing his story. I urge you, if you have the stomach to handle it, to go and watch the video and see what this young man had to overcome. Let's never lose sight of the journey. Even if you don't reach that ultimate destination, you become the person you are through the path you navigate. So there is no other way but this way. And that's another Stoic principle. What is super invaluable is having a great support system. And we all need mentors. We all need friends and partners to help us through through those dark moments. So I'm really happy that Anfernee has all of that. Next week, we are coming back home again. We have a Canadian rapper coming to Tucci Talks to discuss his journey in the rap game and the work he put in to earn himself a Juno nomination. That's a huge honor for a scrawny local boy. If you are enjoying the content, we need this algorithm firing. So subscribe, rate the episode, give feedback, add me to your social media platforms, email me your thoughts on the episode, david@TucciTalks75.com. Another Monday is in the books, so it's time to get the head moving and the shoulders grooving, and it's my job to always make sure you add, that's right, a little funk to your day. Uh-huh. 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 Uh-huh.